Can excrement be profound? I guess it can. If you're looking into the toilet bowl and there's no blood in your stool and it finally dawns on you that you're not going to die after all. I mean, the sense of relief. I've just finished watching a YouTube clip of a hippo farting and then, well, flinging poo from its bum. The way its tail bungeed from side to side like an overworked tongue at a porn convention in order to maximize scat on landscape coverage was execrably mesmerizing, I'll admit, but hardly profound. Now, why am I looking at PooTube clips? Well, I guess it's to avoid talking about the real themes that underpin the strip Misery Loves a Tree that I produced way back in April 2012. And I figured that if I came out with an almighty burst of scatological nonsense, an off-putting spray of verbal diarrhea, if you will, that my listeners would abandon this particular installment in droves, and then I wouldn't have to talk about the yucky stuff. So, really, what I've gone and done is to replace one lot of yucky stuff with a different lot of yucky stuff that may offend you as much as the original lot of yucky stuff still offends me. Okay, that made sense in my head. I guess not so much spoken out in the cold, harsh light of day. Anyway, I shall push on. So, what was I really going on about in this particular strip? I don't think it's clear. I think it's quite vague, actually. I think it's another example of me wanting to say what I needed to say, and yet still playing it safe, hedging my bets. I knew that I was speaking about my time in the Christian culture where church is meant to be the center of your social and spiritual life. You shall have no other institutions before the Lord your church. But, well, I wasn't willing to come right out and say it. I mean, now that I'm out of it all, am I supposed to turn around and decry these people to publicly out and shame them? No, I'm not going to do that. They're not bad people. Well, most of them. Well, actually, I don't know the ratio of good to bad people within the Christian culture. So let's just say there's an undefined portion of Christians that are good people. Probably. Well, I don't know. I think my main beef was with the central message and their blind adherence to it. For me, that message became nothing more than a dehumanizing belief system by the end, by the time I finally decided to jump ship. I guess one of the tenets of Christianity is this, and I'm going to quote Neil Carter, a guy who writes for a blog called Godless in Dixie here. It goes like this. In order to need a savior, you have to feel there is something you need saving from. And that means you have to believe that somehow you are in really, really bad shape. You have to feel that you need saving in the first place. And that means taking whatever your current view of yourself happens to be, no matter how low it already is, and lowering it even further. It goes on. At a bare minimum, you have to believe that your flaws, taken together with the flaws of the rest of humanity, are so egregious and offensive to God that someone had to be tortured and killed in your place. An eternal conscious torment remains for anyone who doesn't properly come to terms with whatever they did that provoked God to do what he did to Jesus on your behalf. You must really be one messed up character. Yeah, I was. Actually, I still am. I wonder if I'll ever get my shit together. I mean, I think I really am broken, but I'm not worthless. At least that's what I try to believe. The not worthless part, I mean. Yeah, the article that I've just quoted from. Now, I was pointed to it via another blog called Victoria Neuronotes. That's where I discovered a comment that was originally made on Neil Carter's Facebook page. And a comment goes like this. Depression is a sin because you aren't appreciating God's gift of life. How dare you not value yourself as a unique creation? But don't value yourself too much, because that's also a sin. Never forget that you're nothing. But you're also so special, Jesus died just for you. But you're still nothing. And I think that's the part I very much wrestled with. That's the part that, well, let's not mince words here, fucked me up. Now, I've been dealing with depression since I was quite young, so, you know, you've heard all of that before. I've talked about it in previous podcasts. But if I may, I'd like to go into some aspects of that so that you gentle listeners can appreciate why I'm such a frigging loser slash whiner, I suppose. So, my depression. Is it genetic? Did I inherit this from my predecessors? It's a good question. When I had a complete meltdown about, was it 3 or 4 years ago? I don't know. Whenever I had that thing happen, I discussed it with my dad at the time. And it does seem to have been, when I say discussed it with my dad at the time, I mean that at the time it happened, I discussed it with my father. I don't mean that at the time I had one father and now I have a different father. That would actually explain a few things as to why I'm so fucked up. But it's nothing like that. You know what? You guys probably understood that from the get-go, and I'm just worried about nothing. Maybe I'm just trying to avoid talking about this yucky stuff. Pushing on. So, I discussed it with my dad at the time it happened, and it does seem to have been something that's had deep roots in the family, this whole depression thing. So there's that. But I also can't quite shake the feeling that there's a little bit of nurture mixed in with my nature there as well. I basically grew up being body shamed. Now, that's not something that my parents did to me or my sister. When I went to school, I didn't really have any friends. I had maybe one friend. No, not maybe one friend. I did have one friend. He's going to be so insulted if he hears this. He's going to give me a right chibbon. He's Scottish. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, for the most part, I was on my own and I would spend my time in the library reading and just trying to escape how I was feeling, really. And then on top of that, I was actually... Well, I was bullied or ignored. It was one or the other. I never really got anything in between, not much. Any time that I was noticed, it was to be made fun of, to be bullied. I had one guy that would trip me up every time I walked past just because he could. I had another guy, he would constantly smack me around the head and smack me in the ear that had my hearing aid in. That was humiliating. And I had another guy who would act like a chimp around me and basically call me Monkey Man because of my face, essentially. Yeah, you know what? I don't really want to talk about this. I don't want to go on about it. It was tough. And I don't think it helped my depression. And why am I talking about all of this? I'm talking about this because this is a lot of the stuff that led up to me getting involved in Christian culture. Because at the outset, it seems like these people are going to love you for exactly who you are. They will love you unconditionally. They will accept you into the fold. You will be like a family. You will be a family. And it was very, very attractive to me. I think I just wanted to belong. I just wanted to be part of a group and not be lonely anymore. But it was a bit of a culture shock. Being raised in a secular household where religion really wasn't discussed. And I mean, I'm not saying that like it's a bad thing. It's just what it was. It wasn't really discussed. So everything I learned about religion was through my own study and through religious education. And that's how I became involved, really. So, you know, they got me when I was at my most vulnerable. I guess you could say they indoctrinated me. I mean, I don't feel like I was ever part of a cult, but I wonder if it may as well have been in a lot of respects, because there's a lot of cult-like behavior that goes on within a church. And they want you to remain not necessarily feeling that good about yourself so that you can be controlled in a sense. And I don't mean that they necessarily do this knowingly, but I don't know. That just seems to be the dynamic even in mainstream churches. I mean, not that I've ever been to every church that's ever existed, so, you know, I couldn't say that across the board. But let's just say, based on my experiences within that whole culture, I am very reluctant to step back into it. In fact, wild horses couldn't drag me there. It's not going to happen. And that's the thing. By the time I did leave the culture, I was feeling pretty bleak. My depression was at an all-time low. And I was going through a lot of anxiety. I was worried about doing this wrong and that wrong and ending up in hell because, you know, there's some silly little thing that's just completely normal. One of the things that I struggled with was, you know, masturbation being wrong and just my sexuality in general, which I'm not going to talk about here. I'm not comfortable talking about my sexuality. It's something I will be judged for, but so I'm going to leave it at that for now. But, you know, knowing this about myself, inside myself for many years, especially regarding my sexuality, it was awful being part of such a culture that acts like they totally accept you where you're at. But if you reveal certain things about yourself, then immediately you're in deep shit. Immediately you're in danger of hellfire. No matter what you've said up to that point, no matter what you've done up to that point, it's quite a terrifying environment to be part of in some ways. Like, you know, terrifying is too strong a word, I think. You can tell I really don't have the words for this yet. I still don't know how to talk about this in an objective way. But let's just say I got the hell out of there after, I don't know, I think it was like almost 15 years of misery, being part of a culture that I never really belonged in anyway. And to be honest with you, you know, like I've said before in previous podcasts, I don't blame anyone but myself. I made that choice to be part of such a thing, and I paid the consequences, and I'm still paying the consequences. And my wife is paying the consequences because I dragged her into it as well. And I think a lot of that is what went into the strip, but you wouldn't know it to look at it. So anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm sick of dying to self. I'm not second, third, or last. I'm not even number one, so I don't want to go to either extreme. I don't need to be selfless. I don't need to be selfish. I just need to be me, and I have needs, just like anybody else. And it doesn't make me needy or immature or weak just because it conflicts with what others want. I am just a man. My sexuality is mine. It is not your sexuality. I want to love whomever will love me in whatever way they want me to love them. And I will not be slut-shamed. I don't want to live under the hollow promises of doctrine anymore and then be shamed when I point it out for what it is. I don't need your beliefs. I just need to believe in me. I just need other people to believe in me. I need to be allowed to believe in you. No more guilt for being wired the way I am. No more body shame. So don't call me monkey face. If you can't call me anything nice because you think I'm ugly, piss off. If you want to make a joke about my appearance, piss off. I will not be body shamed. I will try to be kinder to myself and kinder to the heads of my enemies by not pooing on them. Thank you for listening.